Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The by-elections for the Pulai parliamentary seat and the Simpang Jeram state seat in Johor last Saturday saw the Pakatan Harapan and Barisan National Unity Coalition retaining the seats that were previously held by the late Salahuddin Ayub of Amanah. Now, what were the main takeaways from the results of the polls and what lessons can be learnt for the two coalitions moving forward? Let's ask our first guest tonight, Dr. Shaza Shukri, who is an Associate Professor of Political Science at International Islamic University Malaysia, IIUM. Dr. Shaza, thank you for being on the show today. I'm wondering what your take is on the results of Saturday night. Do you consider them status quo? What were some of the interesting takeaways from last weekend?
I think most definitely it was status quo, and in a way that it shows Barisan Nasional can work together with Pakatan Harapan. But actually, there are a lot of other factors at play, right? This is Johor. We kind of expect it's UMNO's birthplace, right? And we kind of expect them to be strong, supporters to be strong. And then there's the factor that it is the late Salahuddin Ayub, whom is well-loved, well-respected by the people. He has been the incumbent for two terms. So there are all of these things that were in play. At the same time, in a way, may I say that I was a bit surprised too that Pakatan Harapan were able to win with quite a respectable majority, I might say. But people are right to point out that Perikatan Nasional were able to reduce their majority, Pakatan Harapan's majority, but I think it's still a good majority.
All right. Okay. There are some people that are using this victory as justification that Zaid Hamidi's discharge not amounting to an acquittal, DNAA, did not actually affect voter sentiment. In fact, as you said, because it is the kind of birthplace of UMNO, that it revived the UMNO base in Johor and, in fact, brought votes to Harapan. How do you see that play out against those who use this argument and those who say, well, actually, the critics of that decision expected Harapan to be punished by its base?
I think the thing is that what she would say, hardcore supporters, they were more likely to vote according to party lines. This might not be something that people want to hear. The DNAA do affect a lot of people, a lot of voters who are not happy on Pakatan side and obviously on Perikatan Nasional side. But those who went out to vote, they are there to defend their own parties, even if the outcome of the DNAA was unsavory, they don't like it, but they felt that rather than having the alternative, it's better for them to go out and defend what has been Amanah seat and Pakatan before that. So that's how I see it, that the DNAA doesn't affect diehard supporters, diehard voters.
Okay, so what lessons, Dr. Shaza, for the Unity Coalition, the PH and BN Unity Coalition going forward, can they take that support that they relied on in Pulai and Simpang Jeram? Can they take that as a given going forward?
Oh, no. I think we can see that the Perikatan Nasional has made headway. Although they are what we call it, the green wave, so-called green wave, has kind of stopped at Selangor. They couldn't penetrate into Negeri Sembilan in the last PRN, and they can't penetrate into Johor for these two by elections. But PH and BN should not take this lightly. They have to be more active to show that their unity government is serious, their cooperation is serious. Because we have to remember, voter turnout was relatively low. If Perikatan Nasional could bring up the Malay votes, it would not be a safe seat for them in GE16.
Right. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned voter turnout. And also, I want to talk about Perikatan Nasional and how they might take this moving forward. Yes, they may have not won, but they gained in terms of vote share. What do you think are the takeaways from Perikatan Nasional's point of view? Bearing in mind also the campaigning, the rhetoric during the campaigning also may not have struck the right chord in Johor.
Yes, the thing is, I think that Perikatan Nasional is a coalition that's very based on people's identity, that they relate to it. And what I'm trying to say is that certain Malays in Peninsular Malaysia relate more to Perikatan Nasional than others. So maybe that is why their campaigning did not work this time around. But again, the swing votes were there, so it's not like it was a total failure. So for Perikatan Nasional, it's more about figuring out how they're going to move forward. But to say that their strategy failed is incorrect as well. It's just that they need more time, I think, in Johor.
More time, Joe. Okay. Part of their campaign was really about denying the unity government a two-thirds majority. And in a way, their hopes had actually come true, because we have Muda President Syed Saddiq making good on his threat to withdraw support from the government and Dewan Rakyat over the Zahid Hamidi DNA. Can we talk about what that means? How do you see this government moving forward now that it doesn't have the two-thirds majority in parliament? Granted, it's hinged on a single seat deciding factor.
To be honest, I don't see it being a bigger deal than it is being made out to be right now. I say that because even in his statement, Syed Saddiq said he would still support reform agendas. And this is what we need the two-thirds for. It's not like the two-thirds is going to be used for, what shall we say, to change the constitution in a malevolent way. So it's more for good. And Syed Saddiq has promised he's going to support those reform agendas. So I think the unity government is still in a way intact in terms of moving forward. So yeah, it's not such a big deal, I feel. And like you pointed out, it's just one.
All right. But do you think he was right to do so? I mean, he's getting a lot of a mixed reaction, some supporting, some asking him even to step down as MP. Do you think that was the right move for Muda?
In a way, I think it is, because he has, well, threat is such a strong word, but in a way he has threatened this over and over that he's not fully happy with the unity government. He's not fully happy with the way Anwar Ibrahim is leading this government, and has made these threats over and over, making people a bit unhappy with him. So I think maybe this is the right move for Syed Saddiq as an MP, that he can show that he's still principled, that he's voting according to conscience. So this is good for him. So that's my take on it.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Shaza, for joining me on the show. Dr. Shaza Shukri from IIUM. We're going to take a very quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about the takeaways of last Saturday's by-elections in Johor, in Pulai and in Simpang Jeram. Joining me now is political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh. She's an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia's Asia Research Institute. Bridget, thank you for joining me on the show today. Were last Saturday night's results largely anticipated?
The numbers clearly indicated that that the incumbent unity government would win both seats. And the reasons largely have to do with the configuration of the voting patterns, as well as underlying support for Salahuddin, which was the late Salahuddin Ayub, who was very popular in both of these seats. But there are some interesting findings from these seats, particularly from the perspective of new voter realignments, as well as changes in voter turnout. And these were also projected from the perspective of what we saw of voting patterns out of the state elections. So we see, for example, a considerable change in the Malay support towards Pakistan National. We see a considerable change in Indian support, especially in the seat of Pulai, away from the unity government. And we see also a drop in turnout, especially among younger voters, but also across different communities. And I think this is an indication of, one, that it was a by-election, which tends not to bring back as many supporters, but also it was also a kind of reaction to the fact that many voters were unhappy with all the options, but particularly I think what we saw in this particular by-election is many voters stayed home because of the decision involving Zahid Hamidi.
Okay, that's quite interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, because there have been people who have been framing this as as evidence or proof that Zahid Hamidi's dismissal not amounting to an acquittal that happened in the last few days of the campaign, that actually didn't really have a material impact on voter sentiment. In fact, it revived UMNO in Johor, that it showed that UMNO in Johor is still relevant, alive and kicking. How do you respond to people who make these claims?
No question, the victories in both seats did come from some UMNO support. No question, because the Malay vote traditionally in these seats was very low, and it increased in both seats. But I want to point out that in Pulai, my analysis shows that 73% of the Malay vote, 73% of the Malay vote, went to Pakatan National. And in Simpang Jeram, that number is around 69%. So these are voting estimates done through a system of ecological inference, looking at data analysis. And what this shows that both Harapan and UMNO lost Malay support in both of these seats. And I think we also see, however, is that while turnout dropped among Chinese voters, the polarization is even stronger and deepening in the electorate. So we see almost 99% of Chinese that did vote in both seats actually supported the unity government. So yes, crossover vote mattered, but the Malay support for the unity government is still quite weak compared to where it was, and compare even in GE15 compared to now. So there is a voter realignment taking place among the Malay community towards Pakatan National. And so I think it is very premature for people to be saying that the Zahid vote did not matter. I think it did matter. And where we see that issue as being significant is in voter turnout, where a lot of people just didn't come back. Pulai seat is very interesting. Now, of course, a lot of voters in Pulai live in Singapore, so because of the way people are configured. But over a quarter of Malays and Chinese did not come out compared to GE15 in Pulai. And that's not an insignificant number. So I think what we're seeing is not necessarily a kind of a vote like Tanjung Piai, where there was a shift in kind of messaging. I think that shift that did happen in these seats, especially in Pulai, was among the Indian voters who continue to say, hey, wait a minute, we're not with this government the same way we used to be. What we are seeing, however, is that voters are just saying, we're seeing a stepping back, a disengagement. So it's a vote without having to come out to vote.
Okay, so voter realignment is a key issue that all political parties, coalitions will need to pay attention to going forward. Can I ask you, because a lot has happened over the past weekend, over the past week, not just the Johor by-elections, but we've had the DAP Congress that's, you know, had them meeting, facing internal and external criticisms. We've had the Zahid Hamidi DNAA. We've had MUDA withdrawing their support for the unity government now that Anwar Ibrahim's government does not have two-thirds majority based on a single seat. How do you read all of this? What lessons going forward for ANWA, for Pakatan Harapan, for DAP, just from the past week alone?
I think we have to disaggregate the lessons for different parties. All right. I think of the three that you just asked about, the DAP still remains strong with its electorate base. I think, however, as the party should look forward, one should recognize that the unity government and the DAP is now very dependent on Chinese support. And the Chinese support that is changing is that many are just not coming out to vote. And so therefore, they are also having eroding support, but their support that voters that do vote is still relatively strong. And we've seen that in the state elections, as well as in these by-elections. The lessons for the unity government is that they should be more cautious, more generally, about the fact that they're taking their electorate and their political base for granted. This was a victory, and a victory I think well deserved in the late Salahuddin's memory. But I would also say it's a victory that they should treat with humility, and to recognize that fundamentally their support base is very it's very weak from a perspective of different communities. If we look, for example, at Perkata National support changing patterns, they gained a lot of support of voters in their 30s and also among voters above 30, above 40. So we're seeing a situation where the base of the opposition is actually growing. This is something that if I was the unity government, I would be very conscious of. There is a quick saying, oh, we won, it doesn't matter. There is this perception that among their base that they're being taken for granted in this context. And I think, now that these issues of these elections, although there's another by-election coming, there's still a need to move towards actual deliverables. And I think the unity government faces a challenge of trying to build legitimacy across different communities strengthen in terms of policy deliverables. I do think the interesting lesson from these elections, of course, is that the alliance, that what I call there's a situation of electoral codependence. So BN and PH need each other now much more than they did before. But of course, that still hasn't translated into something that is a program. It's still based on the personalities of individuals. And I think how to move that into something concrete is something that I think the unity government has a challenge with.
Thank you so much for speaking with me. That was political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh. We're going to take a quick break here on the show. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. And good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Thanks so much for staying with us on Consider This. Joining me now to help make sense of the recent political developments following last weekend's Pulai and Simpang Jeram by-elections, we have a political scientist, Professor Wong Chin Huat. He's the Deputy Head of Strategy for the Asia Headquarters of the United Nations Sustainable Development Solutions Network at Sunway University. Chin Huat, thank you for being on the show today. I'm wondering how you're reading the low turnout. I mean, I know that by-elections tend to have lower turnout anyways, but the fact that less than half of the electorate for Pulai turned up to vote, is there something more worrying underlying this?
Thanks for having me, Melissa. The low turnout is in fact something people should be worried and cannot be dismissed away with excuses like bad weathers. We know well that voters have faced experienced fatigues since G15 and the state elections. But I think one particular problem with Pulai, it seems to be there's a low morale amongst PH supporters, but they could not bring themselves to vote for PN. Therefore, you see a low turnout. And where democracy as a whole is concerned, this is bad because a low turnout means the winner has actually a weaker mandate. People can always claim more than half the people didn't even bother to come out to vote. And on the other hand, particularly for PH, that's a wake-up call that if they take their voters for granted, they would likely be punished in a more severe way.
Right. I want to ask you about vote transferability and how that played out in the polls that we saw over the weekend.
Now, what we know from the data is that we have only 28% of BN votes estimated to have been transferred to PN. This is much lower than what we have seen in Selangor and Penang. And given the Zahid DNAA controversy, you should expect PN to get more support from middle Malay voters. And there are plenty in urban areas. So such a low transferability suggests that PN ultra-right narrative that attacks Malay supporting other parties with Tak Fieri, accusing them of not being Muslim, and at the same time also attacking the non-Malays, have backfired. So this is lessons that PN need to take into serious consideration.
Okay, so that's lessons for PN. Can I ask you how you are observing? So a lot of commentators have pointed out that, well, actually there was no real material impact from Zahid's dismissal not amounting to an acquittal, that it actually didn't play that big of a role in the final results because it was status quo. How do we think that through? What are your observations, Chin Huat?
No, unfortunately, that narrative is not supported by the numbers. Now, let's go back to this DNAA case. The argument for it is that, well, the PH base would support PH for whatever PH does because of out of fear for the Green Wave. On the other hand, this would excite the UMNO base to come out strongly. Now, had this both been true, PH wouldn't have lost 39,000 votes as compared to GE15. This 39,000 people did not bother to vote this round. So we can only come to one possibility at best. That is, if PH supporters were not bothered by this, then the transferability of UMNO votes to PH is very low. Alternatively, the transferability of UMNO votes to PH been high, then the erosions of PH support was terrible. We do not know exactly which one. It's probably somewhere in the middle, but this is an alarming call for PH and the Madani government. If they think that this works and we should try it on Najib, let Najib get DNAA before he get his pardon, I'm afraid that they would be punished by voters in any upcoming by-election or state elections.
So you talked a little bit about how this is an alarming, this should serve as a wake-up call for PH. In your latest article, Chin Huat, you ended your opinion piece with, quote, "I hope both sides get more sober after Pulai." Can I ask you, going forward, what should be the focus? Will this serve as a wake-up call to the unity government? And what do they need to focus on going forward?
I think this two by-election had given the Madani government a chance to stop the Sheraton Move 2.0 narrative, because PN has lost its momentum here. So the government should actually seize the opportunity and push for an inter-party peace deal so that it can focus on economy and sustainability issues. At the same time, PM need to realize by playing up more of its ultra-right narratives would only deny their opportunity to govern even 5 years, 4 years from now.
Okay, and very quickly, what do you make of MUDA withdrawing their support for the unity government, denying Anwar Ibrahim two-thirds majority?
It's expectable. I think MUDA has taken a decision to distinguish itself from PH, which has made a lot of compromises. And this would not really hurt PH because Syed Saddiq has made clear that it will still work with the government on reform matters. The only thing is that the government cannot take him for granted. And if MUDA can actually attract votes from those who are not happy with PH, rather than letting them go all the way to PN, it may not be a bad thing for PH.
Okay, thank you so much for speaking with me. That was political scientist Professor Wong Jin-Wat from SDSN Asia, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.